Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Firstly, congratulations for lasting this far throughout this year's Ursa event. Ursa 30 has certainly been one to remember, and I know you've got a lot of great content, a lot of excellent ideas, and hopefully made many friends in this event. I'm very, very honoured to introduce you one of my dear friends. This gentleman is the President and Chief Operating Officer of Club One. He is Vice Chairperson on the Ursa Board and has been serving Ursa in many different forms for many, many years. He is an international speaker, and we had the honour of hosting him in Australia not too long ago, which I understand paved the way for an international career that's taken you just about all around the world, my friend, in preparation for one seminar that he wanted to deliver more than any other in his life, and that is the next 60 minutes with you people. The topic this morning will open your eyes to excellence in club operations and profitability, and I want you to give a very warm Saturday morning welcome to my dear friend, Mr. Bill McBride.
Thank you, Paul. Can you hear me okay? Around Thursday afternoon, I lost my voice, so I'm trying to get some voiceover work. It's a dark, dank day in the city. My wife, I tell every time I do a presentation that I'm getting ready to do the most important presentation of my life. And she goes, "You say that every time." And I go, "I know, because you're only as good as your last game." So I'm going to give you everything I have today in 55, 60 minutes. I know we started a few minutes late because the other session ran over a bit. I know everybody's been here and hung in there all week, and you're winding down to the final. So I'm going to try and keep this energetic and moving very quickly. I'm not an overly professional speaker as far as making my career doing consulting and speaking. I work for a club company called Club One. We've got 18 commercial clubs, 7 community centers, 1 medical fitness center, and 57 or so corporate fitness centers around the country. I'm going to be speaking to you today from a perspective of commercial clubs, the 18 commercial clubs that we operate, and what I've learned and my perceptions over my career. But I need to relax a little bit and calm down a little bit. I'm a little nervous about this presentation, so we're going to do just a real quick thing for me to settle. You guys are Group A. You guys are Group B. Okay, you got it. What group are you? Very good. Okay, Group A. When I say How's everything going? Your answer is going to be, this recession's never going to end, okay? Group B, when I say, how's it going? You're going to say, things have never been better. Got it? Group A, how are things going? Group B, how's things going?
Things have never been better.
Yeah, okay, so this presentation is for you guys, all right? You guys, I appreciate coming in. We're in a kind of a weird crossroads, right? Most of us are seeing some light at the end of the tunnel. We started seeing some positive movement around October. January and February were a little better than expected. So we're starting to see a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel in our business. I'm going to share with you basically 4 things today. How many people see black dots? Who sees black dots? Put your hands up. Keep them up. Okay, you're seeing things. I knew you guys had a rough week. There's no black dots on that. We're going to look at the industry quickly, and we're going to talk about people, product, position, and how that affects profitability. We're going to spend roughly 10 to 15 minutes on each one of these topics. I'm a part and connected with lots of operators throughout the country. And in this independent, multi-site, regional, various clubs, there's about 55, 60 clubs that are represented here. So we share our stats with each other to see how things are progressing in various markets. So of this group of about 55 multi-site, independent, geographically U.S.-based clubs in 2010, what we saw was a 0.2% sales growth in 2010. Zero, right? Some clubs had some growth, some didn't, some were negative. But overall, this group of clubs that represents a very good cross-section of the industry, more to the middle and high end in the price point, had zero growth. But the actual attrition for this set of clubs improved about 11%. How many of you experienced similar trending in 2010? Sales were a struggle, but you saw major improvements in attrition. So Club One, particularly our clubs, we saw a decline in sales by 2%. We actually sold less in 2010 than we sold in 2009 by 2%. But our attrition improved 11%, and we were positive, you know, 1 or 2% net growth. Very, very close to flat. How many of you lost members in 2009? We lost a lot in 2009. And in 2010, we actually gained a few. All right. So have you ever had days where neutral was winning? Had a lot of those days last year. And what we found is really that it was on the new member acquisition part. There's still a lot of supply in the market. There's a lot of clubs. Consumers still haven't started expanding their wallets. All right. There's a lot of talk at this conference about medical wellness and medical fitness. That's a huge opportunity for us. How do we get that 80% of the population that we've never successfully attracted? And without that, this is going to continue to be our biggest challenge, this net membership growth, this new member acquisition, figuring out how to build a better mousetrap, if you will. So we look at this and we go, well, what's the real focus that our business should be taking? And a good friend of mine yesterday, a gentleman by the name of Roger Ralph, we were talking, and he goes, Bill, if you had to give somebody 3 points about how you look at the business and what you think makes for success, what would those be? And I had never really thought about it in that term. We were on the trade show floor. And so this is what I told him yesterday. So I added this slide in. One was clarity of direction, which is just your purpose statement, right? Where are you going? Why does your business exist? What are your goals? Being very clear on those outcomes you're trying to generate. The other was humility and openness to learn. This industry has very little room for big ego, but yet there's a little bit of big ego in this industry, right? I'm 45 now, and I've been in the industry since I was in my late teens, and I go, man, I'm so proud of my industry. We're so successful. 20% of the population buys our product. 80% doesn't see the value in it. I'm feeling pretty good about that. So we haven't figured it out yet, right? So humility and openness to learn and adapt and grow, and this is a time of adaption. The whole market's changing with regard to how to get to the 80%, how you communicate, social media, all of those factors. And then, back to having a big ego, operate as if you're the best. Whenever I try to make a decision, I pretend like I'm the best operator in the world. And by doing that, I try to do what I think the best operator would do. So when I summarize, you know, if I were talking about setting expectations with employees and team members, these were 3 bullet points that I thought kind of encapsulated my philosophy about people. Everybody understanding the goal and the purpose and the reason why we're here, being very clear on which way we're going, having humility and openness. How many folks saw the presentation, 7 Dysfunctions of a Team? That's what that's all about, right? And then operate as if you're the best. Operate at the highest possible level with what you give. So that's kind of my setup for people. Every year I've presented here, I put this slide in. And this is the General Electric Jack Welch employee evaluation grid, right? And the way this grid works is quite simple. Values on the left, performance on the bottom. Values are simply, do your people operate consistently with how you want your business to be represented? Do they operate consistently with your personal integrity and character? Performance is easy. Do they sell? Do they produce? Do they represent? Do they serve? Do they fix? Do they make good cookies? Whatever their job is. So if you go to the top right, those are the folks on your team that have high values and integrity, and they're your top producers. Probably the people that are represented here at IRSA from your team, right? The super players. So I want you, as you wind down from this week, I want you to think about who on your team is in that top right bucket. How do you manage those folks? This is where we have audience participation. How do you manage those folks? Anybody but people that work for me can't answer. You don't manage, Lynn Conrad says. What do? Correct. You love them. You kiss them, you hug them, and you love them, right? You say, are you doing well? You recognize them, you give them support, and you get out of their way and let them do their thing. So the bottom left quadrant, these people suck, okay? They don't represent what you represent, and they don't perform very well, and they're just really, really annoying to be around. What do you do with those folks? Fire them, right? Quickly, right? And I'm in the state of California, so you have to fill a lot of paperwork and write it up 3 times and follow lots of law. But do that as quickly as you can. People on the top left, values-oriented, but God bless them, they can't perform worth a darn. What do you do with those folks? Huh? Train them. How many people have a cat? How many of you have a cat? How many of you have a dog? How many of you have a cat wish you had a dog? How many of you have tried to change your cat into a dog? Dog people, any dogs that converted to cats, it doesn't happen, right? It's hard to train people sometimes to do something that they're not programmed and built to do, right? You can't make cats into dogs. But training them is good because there is a chance that it's a skill set training issue, right? So you first try to train them. Say that doesn't work. What do? Pardon? Move them. Find a better job for them, right? Get them in a better position. What if you don't have that position? What do? Try and help them get a job somewhere else. They're good people. You like them. They're good brand ambassadors. They're nice. They just aren't very good at what they're doing, right? But you've got to act quickly because it hurts your business if you don't. So that brings us to the problem category. That would be the group on the bottom right. High producers, but complete renegade, lone soldiers, ego-driven, don't have to wear their name tag because they sold $20,000 in personal training, and that rule just does not apply to me. Anybody got anybody like that? All right. High producer, top salesperson. I sell 60 a month. I don't understand why you're upset that the paperwork isn't filled out. I mean, do we really need a signature on a contract? Is that really important? So these people are a struggle for us, right? Especially now when you're trying to grow your business. How many of you are wishing you had more program revenue and more sales, right? So what do with those folks? What do? I mean, besides what some of us do a lot of times, which is just ignore it. Fire them? No. Well, maybe eventually. But you got to get them on board, right? So 30, 60, 90-day coaching training program. Hey, but that's where, again, for those of you that saw the dysfunction of a team, that's where the trust and the accountability and the conflict avoidance, you know, that's where all that plays in. It's, hey, you produce and you're great, but I'm not going to let you be on this team because you're hurting other people from being great and producing. Sometimes it's better to have 5 B producers than 1A and 4 C's, right? So you move those guys out if you can't get them on board. And as you go through this team building and this people piece of your business, we sometimes have long review forms. I'm about a year late in doing the formal review because the form is just so structured and boxy. This is the review I like to do on my team. Here's what I like about you, and here's what we want to see in the upcoming year. So the activity for you to think about is put all the people on your team in that box, the first box, and then do reviews on them And here's a very simple way to do it. Here's what I like about you. Here's what I like to see. So that's kind of a tool I use to help create the alignment around what we're trying to do. A lot of times I feel like in my clubs, we're all jogging together like a marathon, right? But we're bumping into each other. And even though we're going in the right direction, we're having friction and getting in each other's way. Do you ever experience that? Where you're working with people and you're going the right direction together, but you feel like you're getting in each other's way? This is the process to go through to help define those roles and to create alignment and accountability and structure so that you can all be moving together without causing that friction. So what product do we have? We have an experiential product, right? This is our retention model. This is how we base our business. We enroll people. We try to onboard them properly. We want to connect them. When they fall out of the loop, we want to intervene and bring them back up and help with them with behavioral change. And if it all works out, we gain loyalty, right? With behavioral change, we know that people are going to fail. They're going to slip up. You know, alcoholics very rarely get sober without a few slip-ups. If you've known smokers, they're slip-ups. Exercise, they're slip-ups. So being able to pull people back from the abyss is part of our attempt at creating a model. The value proposition that we're trying to create in our organization is based on these three circles. The product's got to be useful. With 80% of the people not coming to our clubs, they're telling me my product's not useful for them. Plain and simple. I'm not serving people that are going to medical fitness centers. I wasn't serving people that went to Curves. Okay? I'm not serving people that are going to an independent studio. My product is not useful for them. Okay? They don't see the value in it. Then there's the usability. Is your product easy to use? How many Southwest Airline fans do we have? People that love Southwest, right? You go to Southwest Airlines, how easy is it to buy a ticket? Simple. Have you ever bought a ticket on United? It's not quite as simple. So how usable is your product? There's all this technology out there that's coming up, and it's overwhelming. It's like every day there's a new technology, a new product. What do I use? What do I do? But they're all converging to the same thing. People having a very easy-to-use experience with clubs. Online enrollment, kiosk enrollment, online customer service, referrals to your club. I want to refer my friends without talking to a salesperson. I don't want my friends to talk to a salesperson. I want them to be able to just go and experience your product. All of that's converging to make the product more useful for people, or usable for people. And then desirability is the wow factor. It's the sexy factor. It's the why I want to go there factor. People don't do things because of logic. They do things because of emotion, right? So this is the emotional. How does your club emotionally play? So what I'm challenging with our clubs is that every experience that you want to have for your members, that you think about from a design perspective, from an engineering perspective. How many people are hot? How many people are cold? How many people are just right? How many people had no idea what their temperature was until I asked the question? Right? Good design is invisible. But when something goes wrong, that's when you know you have bad design, right? So behavior is a function of a person and their environment. People behave a certain way, for the most part, based on the structure of the environment around them. Have you heard of the study where they took the prisoners, or they took normal, everyday people, made half of them prisoners, half of them guards? Years and years ago. And they were doing a research project, and they had to shut it down short because the guards were being too brutal to the prisoners. So they put normal, everyday people in a situation, and they behaved completely contrary to their morality that they had going in. How many of you have gone to the dentist and told the dentist you're going to do things a little different today? That instead of doing the x-rays first, you'd rather have the cleaning first, and you make it do the x-rays later. And you've changed your whole system around because you just wanted to do it differently. Nobody. You go to the dentist and you just follow right along. You guys came in here and behaved exactly like you were supposed to. You came in here and sat down. You talked. You faced me. When I started talking, you got quiet. Okay? You behaved exactly like this situation was designed for you to behave. But we don't think about that. And we don't think about all the experiences in our club. What things happen in your club that should be designed? That you should think about the outcome and then work backwards from. And go, okay, I want this to happen when somebody goes to a TRX class. I want them to feel this way and do this when they're done. Everything you do, I challenge that you should take it from the end and bring it back and engineer those activities. Think of the power of if every time you had a group fitness class, the instructor said, hey, everybody, I'm so-and-so. I just want you to know the one thing that I think is the coolest thing going on at the club this week. All right? What if that happened every single class? Now, some of your instructors do it, and some don't, and that's not design. That's letting people run your business for you the way they think it should be run without any brand continuity. Okay? So what do you do? This is some of the things that we do, right? We have sales, we have tennis, we have fitness, we have operations, we have dance classes, we have youth programs, we have all these wonderful things. How thorough have you been in designing those experiences and saying, hey, wait a minute, when somebody does this, what's going to happen? So I challenge you to look at designing your outcomes from the perspective of what the customer wants and what you want to provide the customer. Because I think if we do this for the deconditioned and sedentary market, we'll all grow our businesses. I believe that. How do we figure out what these people need? How do we design that? You with me? For those of you that have looked at the handouts that were posted, and you see some deviation, that's typically how I do things. I turn in handouts and then I change it based on the presentations that I've heard and what's going on at the show and what people have been getting. So if you would like a full copy of this whole presentation, all you got to do is leave me your business card and I'll have it out to you in a week on email. Okay, so if you want a full copy of the presentation, you'll get that. So I'll just take sales for example. This is not a sales training class, but I want to take this as an area that we put a lot of time in designing the experience. Okay, what did we want to happen with the sales process? We have a call that comes in. Everybody's got TIs that come in, right? We designed how that call is going to be handled. And there's two parts of that call. There's attitudinal and there's technical. You know, if you ask somebody, what's the most important part of a TI, a telephone inquiry, people will say, get the appointment, right? That's not the most important part of a TI. The most important part of a TI, a telephone inquiry, is to make people want to come see your club, all right? Whether they set an appointment or not, it's irrelevant. It's that they want to come in, and they're so motivated to come in, they do. So when we set an appointment, we confirm that appointment by design. When you come in, you fill out a guest registration. We won't send you a thank you card, typically, when you come in as a guest. We will send you a thank you email. What does that do by design? By design, that makes sure that the sales reps get the email address and that we have it on record for all prospects. Well, by design, when you join, you get the personal thank you. And every step of that sales process is mapped out, trained, reinforced, and a lot of times it doesn't happen the way we want it to, right? But that's not the point. The point is we know how we want it to happen and we train and work towards that. We don't leave it up to chance. And a lot of times I find that that I've left things, too many things up to chance in my career. I've left too many things just out there. You're going to have a culture of your club, right? Every club's got a culture. Choices, do you want it to evolve and develop on its own, or would you like to guide it? So we have a process, and our goal is to have people feel a certain way about our brand. And so we articulated, what does that brand look like? What does that brand feel like if we do it right? And if we do it right, people will say Club One is friendly, Club One is warm, it's comforting, it's supporting, it's a happy place, and it's safe. That's what we want people to viscerally feel about our experience, okay? Now, if I hire you and I say, go out there and be a great trainer, and you say, great, I'm a great trainer, and I don't tell you how I want people to feel. You know, training somebody in a hospital clinical setting is different from training somebody in a health club. And some health clubs are performance-based, where it's all about serious performance, and we want to do this. And some are, I want a social outlet. I want somebody to push me because I'm a little bit not motivated to do this myself. There's different continuums, right? So what are you trying to accomplish with your brand? So now you've articulated where you're going, what you're about, who you've got, how they're doing, what you want people to feel viscerally about your brand, what you want them to say in an elevator speech to tell the unique, differentiated story about you. How do you get that word out there? How do you communicate what's going on with your product being different from the rest or unique? Your position's communicated by a lot of ways, right? Most importantly, maybe your staff, right? How many of you have had a bad experience at a business and you didn't go, you know, you walked into Starbucks. I'm not going to dog Starbucks. I'm a Starbucks fan. You walked into Pete's Coffee and you ordered your coffee and the guy punched you in the face. Okay? Now, the guy's name was Johnny. You go home, you tell your friends and your family. You don't tell them Johnny punched you in the face. You can tell them, I went to Pete's and they punched me in the face. Right? Has that ever happened to you? Anybody that's happened to? Just me. Maybe it was personal. But think about it. You go, United Airlines lost my bag. Southwest, oh my God, they were so friendly. Right? You don't say, Emily, this wonderful woman that, by the way, happens to work at Southwest, which has such a good sense of humor, right? Your people are your biggest brand communicators. If they screw up, you suck. If they do well, you look really good. Have you had psychotic episodes in your day where you get an email from a member going, oh my God, I can't believe you guys, you walk on water, you changed my life, I lost 40 pounds, and my face got pretty. It's amazing what you did. And you're like, damn straight. We're the best. That's right. Nobody in this market touches us. Look how good we serve our membership, right? Feeling pretty good about that, aren't we? And then you go back and you open the next one. How stupid are you people? You can't even keep towels in there and your people are so rude. I went to the club and nobody was at the front desk. And when I went into the sauna, this man looked at me. And I looked at him and we have a good relationship now. But that's not the point. That they will complain about various things, right? And they will, it'll be, you'll walk out of that one going, man, I suck. My club is terrible. My staff is just not very competent. They must not be aligned. They must not care. They must be terrible people. I'm a terrible leader. Oh my God, right? And that can happen in the blink of an eye, right? You go from hero to zero. One minute you're great, and then the next minute you're the worst operator in the world. And which one's true? Both, right? You are only as good as your people's execution. So, question? Oh, I thought you. You're only as good as your people's execution, right? And so part of the message I want to leave today is just thinking through that execution that you want to happen. So there's all kinds of things, right? Everything affects your position in the marketplace. And your website and online presence are becoming more and more important in that arena. Because that is where people are going more and more and more to find the true scoop out about you. And if you don't engage in that conversation, doesn't mean it ain't happening, okay? So I'm like, I'm 45 and I got a Twitter account, I got a Facebook account, but I never post anything on Facebook because it just feels kind of weird, you know, I don't really have anything important to say. And tweeting, that's just like, you know, having lunch. Hamburger. I mean, you know, like, I don't think anybody that even loves me really cares what I'm doing. So I struggle with some of that as a consumer, you know, like just for me. But it's becoming more and more prevalent. I use LinkedIn. I use LinkedIn a lot, right? So some folks that are skewing a little bit younger are using Foursquare, all right, checking in places, all right? And the list goes on and on and on. But that's more and more important, and we're going to talk about that in just a moment. So with the marketing approach, what is your marketing strategy? What is your positioning strategy? You've got this wonderful brand with these wonderful people with everything designed as it should be. How do you get that out? And this is the path that we've kind of gone on. We used to measure and market features and benefits. We're a great health club. We got the best equipment. Come join our club. Then we said, hey, we got cool programs, Pilates, yoga, this, that, and the other. Come join our club. Then we said, hey, this is a different kind of health club. We're inviting, we're supporting, we're individualized, customized programs for you, right? Then we said, wait a minute, we'll guarantee you results. When you come join our club, we'll make sure you succeed here, right? And where we are now is we think that the ideal approach to marketing should be that we can provide you with the exact appropriate solution when you need it. If that's what you think is the powerful marketing position, you can't do that unless you're doing it in real time, when people need it and when they're communicating with you. So these are some of the many online social type of medium now, right? How many of you have done stuff with Yelp? Show of hands. How many of you have done stuff with YouTube? Have a YouTube channel? How many of you have LinkedIn profiles for your business? How many of you have a Facebook page? How many have done something with Groupon? How many know what Zuberance is? Anybody know what Zuberance is? How many have taken possession of the real estate for your clubs to be Foursquare locations? You've registered with Foursquares and set up admin on that. These are some of the things out there right now with regard to positioning. It seems like every day there's a new twist, a new angle. So your position in all of these mediums needs to be very, very consistent in voice. And as this thing bakes out, if your voice is different and your look and feel and your content delivery is different in all these mediums, you will look disconnected, disjointed, and it'll be just like each employee representing a different way. So you've got to speak in the same voice on your position throughout your organization, internally, externally, and especially in the pretend world. Okay? But with that said, there's a different demographic or psychographic or segmentation within each of those. I'm not a Twitter or Foursquare person. I'm a LinkedIn person with a little bit of marginal Facebook overlap, right? So you also have to know who is in the different areas with regard to your membership and your prospect base so that you can tailor in a consistent voice your messaging to those different things. It's not okay just to put your Facebook content on Twitter. That does you no good. Okay? So this is more of for thought-provoking purposes than telling you exactly what to do. We had our most, this is a review sharing thing we did. Zuberance is one of many companies, and I'm not plugging Zuberance. What I want to tell you about is this concept, okay? We sent all of our members an email that said, how likely are you to recommend somebody to this club? Anybody know what that question is called? Net Promoter Score question, right? So if you gave it a 9 or 10, it said, boom, great. What do you like most about Club One? I like the front desk staff. They're always so friendly. Boom. Can we put this on Yelp and City Search and all the review sites? Sure. Boom. I've just populated the internet with a testimonial. Thank you for thinking so highly. Here's a gift. And would you like to give a gift to your friends? Sure. Give them a 14-day membership. Sent this out to my members. Within hours, my members had populated several hundred positive reviews, sent out 4,000 links to their friends, because it pulls from their address book, lets them send the 14-day guest pass from them, not from us. 4,000 referrals. 1,600 activated, a couple hundred joined. And they're still out there, right? You know, it's a progressive thing. So the exuberance is a platform that allows that all to happen without the club. Okay? If you go to Chili's restaurant, there's a button on the bottom left that says free queso and chips. If you click on free queso and chips, it says on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely are you to recommend somebody eat at Chili's? If you give it a 9 or 10, thank you, here's your queso and chips. Would you like to share queso and chips for a friend? Why do you like Chili's? Populate the same thing, okay? That, you got two things going on the internet, right? People look to see reviews, and you got an opportunity to prospect, okay? So that's a pretty cool thing, and that's how it executed. Facebook contests. So easy to build your Facebook page. Have each member write a story about why your club changed their life and give them a prize. The best essay gets a year membership. The next five good ones get this. Everyone will be recognized on our Facebook page, blah, blah, blah. Overnight, you can get hundreds of content about transformational experiences, and you can build your content on your social media. Thinking about those types of things as far as your position. Twitter. We use Twitter differently than we use Facebook. We use Twitter to do updates when people really want a lot of more mundane content. If you want to sign into the Twitter account for your club, we'll tell you if a class is running late, or an instructor didn't show, or sauna's out, or we got a party coming up. We can send content on Twitter for those people that are really wanting to be in the know about everything. Again, same voice, different group. We've been doing a lot of experimentation around these social media things because this is the place where we think we can help grow our membership to be profitable. Groupon, our most recent Groupon, we sold 667. Okay, so we made about $22,000 on our end, and we gained 667 paid leads. Historically, all the operators I talked to about Groupon, most are only getting a 4 to 6% sales ratio from total sold. Okay? I've done 5-6 times now in different types of these, and I'm getting 4-6% of what I sold to my membership on a 1-month trial. Okay? We're now experimenting with a 2-month trial. I mean a 2-week trial. All right? But the point is right now what I'm seeing is about a 30% show ratio of those that buy, and about a 6% conversion ratio. The key to this stuff is finding the right message that resonates. If I told you you could, you know, isn't it cool that you can get paid money and get handed a bucket of leads? I mean, isn't that kind of a cool concept? That's a radical shift in what's going on. We did the same kind of thing with Yelp when we sold 1,200 with Yelp. How many of you are producing your YouTube channel? Move of the week, program. I know some club operators that have members do videos for a video contest. Same thing as populating your Facebook page, your members subscribing. All of those things are geared toward communicating what we started with, your position. Every year that I present at IRSA, I share this slide because I think it resonates well with what we're all up to. We use the Net Promoter Score on a consistent basis with our membership. Now we're using it to identify our most happy members so they refer and we can leverage that referral, communication, and relationship. If you know who your best members are and you can do things for them that are different and special, your Facebook members are your best members. What are you doing differently for them that's unique and special? The Net Promoter Score, for those of you that don't know, how likely are you to refer somebody to this business? Nines and tens are net promoters. Sixes and below are net detractors. Sevens and eights are statistically neutral. You take the percentage of detractors from the percentage of promoters, and it gives you a score. Southwest, 60s, 70s, 80s. Okay. When they first started, businesses across all industries were about 16. This is research done by the Gallup Organization and published in Harvard Business Review. But we started in 05 tracking it. When we first did it in 05, we were a 19 across our system. Average. We're now 50. Okay? And a lot of that jump is the way we're communicating with our members on these social platforms. And what we found is if you're in the 20s, you're mostly foundational facilities, great stuff, but a facilities-based service. When you start getting really cool programming, you get in the 20s and 30s. When your people are just spectacular, you start getting in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. And when you knock it out of the park, you're over 50. And if we get to 60, then I'm going to change the slide to where knocking out of the park will be 70. But the point is that foundational approach to where you know who your best members are and you're speaking to them. So the concept simply is what we started with. People first, product second, making sure you're rethinking everything you've ever thought about positioning your product. And if you do that right, hopefully we can attract that 80% of the market and grow our industry even greater. Anybody have any questions for me? Anything? All right, well, I hope this was helpful. Please fill out your evaluations. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon, and thank you for being here. Yes, sir. Internet, and then we use postcards at the front desk that say go to the survey link. So we promote it in the clubs and then on email to the members. So it's a newsletter, email, in the club, and postcards. Hey, don't forget to fill out the survey this year. And that helps grow our percentage of emails. We're right now about 80% of our membership. We now have their email addresses, which is another big point. Yes, sir. I used to do it annually, then I tried to do it quarterly, then that's too much, then I dropped it 3 times a year, now I do it twice a year. Yes, ma'am. Yes, yes. And we're struggling and we're working on what does the club have authority to do and what does this person do. Right now the club sends it all in and we're farming content and we're centrally controlling it because we want to get the voice right first. We have a marketing group. One person, I'm in my 40s, our marketing director's in her 30s, and our social person's in her 20s. Okay? So, and there's something there. If you read Outliers, there's a lot about this whole generational thing about, you know, the voice and the resonating. But yes, so one person is working to be the voice, you know, with support from other team members. Any other questions? Thank you very much. I appreciate it.